Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, July 15th, 2012. This is episode 892. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, visit Stamps.com, click the radio microphone, and use the offer code TECHGUY. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphone from your home or office. Find out what your gadget is worth at Gazelle.com. And by ShareFile. Enhance your workflows and files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today. For a 30-day free trial, visit ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter the promo code TECHGUY. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk about computers and the internet, yeah. Certainly cell phones, home theater, digital photography. Chris Marquardt, our digital photography expert, coming up 33 past the hour. Yes, it's that tech guy on the radio again. Talking tech since 1992, 20 years now of answering questions and talking about technology. 20 years now. I'm sorry, photography is not at 33 past this hour, 33 past the next hour. Thank you, Chris Marquardt. He's in the chat room. We have a nice little chat room, by the way. Friendly little place, just a few thousand people talking about tech. Place you can go to kind of be the, you know, the wiseacres in the back of the class. But, you know, the great thing about the people in the chat room, they're very smart. And they often help me out with answers and so forth. So if you want to do that, visit our website, techguylabs.com. There's a chat link there. There's links to previous episodes, show notes for each and every episode, 892 of them, and a whole lot more. techguylabs.com. There's also a link to the phone number there, which is 8888-ASK-LEO. Had yesterday, last show, three callers call in and say, "You don't talk about Windows Phone enough. You don't talk about Windows Phone enough." It is true. Like, you know, I kind of see the world as a choice between Android and iOS. BlackBerry's kind of, as many people love it, mostly it's failing. Company's doing terribly. They announced a huge loss this quarter, and that their next version of BlackBerry operating system 10. Won't be out till next year. Probably way too late to compete in the Android iPhone race. But it is, in a way, a three-horse race, because way back there, in the back of the pack, it's neck and neck, Android and iOS, Android and iOS, and 18 lengths behind Windows Phone 7. And it's not a bad choice, except that there are very few apps for it, very limited. But it's not a bad choice. I think really what the worst part about it now is that Microsoft has effectively kind of killed the current version by saying, oh, yeah, there's a new version, Windows Phone 8, coming out later this year. And, oh, by the way, it's incompatible and no existing Windows phones will be upgradable, period. You'll have to buy a new phone to get it. See, Microsoft, that's kind of how they think. In the world of Windows, people generally don't upgrade the operating system. Geeks might, but real people usually just get a new operating system when they get a new computer. That's why so many people still use Windows XP. It's been 10 years since they bought a computer. And they'll get whatever's current when they get the new computer. And I think Microsoft's thinking that way in phones. It ain't that way in phones, is it? I don't think so. I think people feel like, although I have to say, in the Apple world, it pretty much isn't. Most Apple iPhones get upgraded. You know, the really old ones don't, but usually the last couple of generations, last couple of years get upgraded. Android phones, it's really hit or miss, and that's not Google's fault. or even the fault of the people who make the phones, Samsung and LG and HTC and Motorola. It's really the carriers, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, Sprint. They don't really want to spend the bandwidth pushing these updates, or maybe even more importantly, the tech support resources. So they treat it like Microsoft's treating it. You buy a phone, it comes with an operating system. That's the one you use until you get a new phone. Maybe that's the right way to think of it, is it? We can talk about that. 8888 Ask Leo. See, geeks like upgrades. Maybe to our detriment. But isn't that, from a geek's point of view, is that's the cool time when you see that little pop-up on your screen that says, an update is available. Yeah! Even if it breaks everything, which it often does. Yeah! I want an update. I want to see what's new. Show me some cool new features. Yeah, I like that idea. But real people probably don't think of it that way, do you? Are you a real person? I don't know. You have to. This would be one way to tell. Do you look forward to, you know, the smallest upgrade in your software or hardware? Like, oh, I can't wait to see. When you're watching your TV, actually, I don't know if this ever happens. Let's wait. When you're watching your Blu-ray disc and it says firmware update, do you get excited, hoping for new features, new excitement? Or are you the kind of person that goes, oh, no. Most people, I would guess, don't even think about what version of Android or Windows phone they're running. They just, you know, when's the last time on a feature phone, you know, one of those candy bar phones from Nokia, you even knew what version of the operating system you got? I think that's one way to tell a geek from a non-geek. Ask them. If they have an Android phone, say, what version of Android are you using? If they go, oh, it's gingerbread, but I'm looking forward to upgrading to honeycomb any minute now. Oh, it's ice cream sandwich, but I can't wait for jelly bean. Geek. Geek. Big fat geek. If they go, huh? There's an operating system on this thing, then you know. They're normal. They're the normals. So this show's for both of yous. I consider it geek education for normal people. How about that? So if you kind of wonder what's going on, maybe you're kind of geek curious. You know, you're thinking, I'd kind of like to maybe see what it's like on the other side over there. You know, what does that feel like to be excited about an upgrade? Then this is certainly a show for you. It's for the geek curious. Or, you know, and we get a lot of calls from people who are just, you know, and they say it too, apologetically. And please don't, no need to apologize. They go, oh, Leo, I'm sorry. I'm not a geek. I'm not technology literate. However, I have a question. Good. I want to hear from you for sure. I want to help you. See, I'm a geek, so you don't have to be. It's my job to be, you know, the new operating system. And I do. Oh, I do. I'm already running Windows 8, and that would be another way to test if you're a geek. Are you beta testing Windows 8 right now? Oh, yeah? You're a geek. If you go Windows what? Then you're not. Now, sometimes the tech industry throws people for a loop. See, Windows 8's coming in October. I think we now know Microsoft's kind of said that they call it the RTM, the ready to manufacture version of Windows 8 will be out next month. And you can expect general availability, or GA. So you got RTM and you got GA. Well, that's another way to know if you're a geek. You use acronyms to an absurd extent. I have the RTM right now of CPA Windows 8, but I'm hoping to get the GA sometime in Q4. Yeah. That's a geek. So I think that this is going to throw some people for a loop, because people are going to go to the store and they're going to go to the Windows computers aisle and they're going to look, and Windows is going to look really different. Now, maybe if you've never used it before, it will be fine. In fact, if you've never used it before, it'll be great. It'll be, oh, this is easy. I like this. Oh, I like these tiles. I like this. Oh, the weather on the desk, the whole thing. Oh, I love that. If you've ever used Windows before, you're going to go, where's my start button? How do I shut this thing down? Where does Excel go? How do I install? It's all going to be different and weird, at least at first. Microsoft's taking a very calculated risk here. They're going all in. They really want everybody to move to the new Windows 8 style. They call it Metro. It's named, believe it or not, after the subway system, after the simple, unbeautified signs in the subway. They often don't even have text, right? They're just pictograms. That's the inspiration for Metro. The problem with that is if you don't know what those icons mean, those pictograms mean, it's like, what am I looking at? What is this? Who are you? And I think you're going to get a lot of that. Be interesting. Be interested to see. Hey, let's talk about Windows 8, whether you're a geek or not. I'll answer your non-geeky questions. 888-ASK-LEO is my phone number. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your call next. Hey, let me talk a little bit about stamps.com. I'll tell you, this is something the normals like. And geeks like, too. But you don't have to be geeky to use stamps.com. Stamps.com, the whole point of this is you don't have to go to the post office anymore. It is not a good experience these days to go to the... First, you got to find one that's open. Then you got to find parking. Then there's often a line, especially if you go when it's convenient for you, like lunchtime. Well, so it's convenient for everybody else. And so there you are at the post office waiting, wasting your time, when you could be printing postage yourself. This sounds vaguely... It's not illegal. This is, in fact, the post office loves this. It's called stamps.com. It lets you print official U.S. postage with your computer and your printer. You don't need a postage meter. I tell you who doesn't love this? The postage meter, folks, because you don't need one anymore. You don't need their expensive special ink. I think they pretend, oh, the postal service machines need special ink that costs $1 million a gallon. That you need. No. You need a regular printer, regular computer, and stamps.com. And now you print. By the way, with the stamps.com deal, and I'm going to tell you how you can get this all free in a bit, you get a USB scale, see? So that plugs right into your computer. That's sweet. So you pop the letter or the package on there. It's got a readout on the front, so you could use it standalone, but it also, because it's USB, it communicates with the stamps.com software, and bada bing, bada boom, you got exactly the right postage, never a penny more than you need to spend. For packages, for letters, you can print right on the envelope, by the way, and it's very professional looking, really sweet looking. You could print it for anything you want to mail, and then here's the beauty part. If you are putting regular stamps on a package over 13 ounces, did you know this? You have to bring it to the post office because they got to look in your eyes and see, are you okay? Are you cool? Not with stamps.com. I don't care how big or small. Stamps.com, you do the thing with stamps.com with a scale. You print it on the envelope. You print the package. You put the postage. Then you call. If you want, you can use a regular pickup or your mail carrier's regular pickup, or you can call them for free, schedule free pickup. They come. They get it. That's it. You could literally, I wouldn't recommend it, but you never have to get up from your desk again. Now, here's a special deal. I want you to go to stamps.com right now. Stamps.com. Now, before you get all excited and say, oh, that looks good, $80 bonus offer. I think I'll take that. Before you do that, what I want you to do is click the radio mic on the upper right. Heard about us on a radio or podcast? Yes. By the way, I think we're the only podcast they're on. So they mean us. Type in Tech Guy. And then, first of all, you'll see a really old picture of me, because that's how long I've been using stamps.com. Then you'll also see this $110 bonus offer. It's $55 in postage coupons, a free digital scale, $5 supply kit, 4-week trial. All you do is pay shipping and handling for the scale. I think it's $5. This is a great trial offer. Please take advantage of it. Everything's yours to keep after the fact. The scale's all yours. Stamps.com. Click the Try Me Now microphone and do the Tech Guy as the offer code for a $110 bonus offer. Try it for a month. What do you got to lose? Believe me, you'll love it. Stamps.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Good day to you. How are you? May I help you? Did you see? It's kind of sad. The geek squad's laying off some, 600 geeks? No, I'm not laughing. I'm sad. That's a lot of geeks out of work geeks. There's nothing sadder than an out of work geek. They stay at home in their underwear. They take their computer apart and put it back together again for no apparent reason. Just because they want to. Oh, I feel bad. I guess it's tough times for all retail. And Best Buy's feeling it. You know, when you buy a computer nowadays, I would say you're just as likely to buy online, right, at Dell or even Amazon than you are to go to a store, a lot of people anyway. So Best Buy's struggling to stay afloat. You know, I read an interesting article about Amazon.com. Stand back for Amazon.com. Did you see what they're doing? They're building. Okay, so for a long time, Amazon did not want to do business in your state. The whole premise for Amazon.com was you would buy online at lower prices, in most cases without sales tax. Right now in California, our sales tax is almost 9% in most areas, so that's a significant savings right there. And then they'd ship it to you, and if you're an Amazon Prime member, they'd ship it two-day mail for free. So free shipping, no tax, and generally lowest prices out there. That was Amazon's strategy. But they realized that, A, all the states want to charge them sales tax. The states hate this. California, for instance, passed a law saying Amazon customers have to pay sales tax. You're always supposed to. I don't know if you knew this. There's all the states supposedly have this thing. In California, they call it a use tax, where at the end of the year, you're supposed to write on your tax return how much you bought from Amazon and pay the sales tax, use tax. So really, it wasn't a question of whether you owe the tax. You do. It's whether the retailer collects it or whether you voluntarily offer it. Problem is, state says we're losing billions of dollars because nobody's paying the use tax. So we want the retailer, Amazon, to collect it, just as all brick and mortar stores collect it. Amazon says, no, the law is very clear. If you don't do business, if you don't have a physical presence in a state, you don't have to charge sales tax. That's how mail order online has been for some time. State of California passed a law requiring them to, so Amazon punched back. They said, okay, fine. So there's hundreds of thousands of people in the state of California who are affiliates. We're cutting them off. No more. That means hundreds of thousands of angry voters who go to the state legislature and say, wait a minute. I'll give you, it cost me $30,000 a year. That's not insignificant, is it? If you buy stuff on my website, there's a link that goes through, if you buy it on Amazon, it goes through Amazon, and I get an affiliate fee, a small cut from Amazon. It's usually, you know, 5%, 4%, something like that. It's a significant amount of money. So a lot of these affiliates were, what? So it went back and forth. The governor said, okay, we'll give you a year, Amazon. Amazon made an agreement. And in fact, they're doing this now across the country, making agreements with states. Yes, we will collect sales tax. What? Well, here's what's happening. Amazon realized that thinks that the reason people buy from Amazon is it's convenient and fast, almost as fast as getting it from a retailer, and the sales tax is a smaller part of the thinking. I'm sure they've done research. Convenience is a big thing. And Amazon has lately, I don't know if you've noticed this, I have. I have Amazon Prime, so it's supposed to come in 2 days. Sometimes it comes tomorrow. I'll order something and it just shows up the next day. It's a weird feeling. It's like, wow, that was great. Wow, I'm happy about that. Zappos does that too. A lot of companies do that, where it's kind of like surprise and delight the customer by arriving sooner. Now they've decided, well, what? Let's pay sales tax. Let's collect sales tax. That's fine. It doesn't cost them anything. They just collect it. Let's collect the sales tax. But in order, you know, now that we're doing that, now we can put delivery facilities in every major city of the country. We can actually have a presence, a physical brick and mortar presence in every city. And we can deliver not only next day, but same day. Imagine buying a laptop. This is Farhad Manju writing in Slate talks about this. He says, imagine if I bought a laptop this morning at work and it was waiting for me when I got home that night for, you know, a small $5 delivery charge. Wouldn't that be cool? That's what Amazon's plan is. They realize that the convenience is the main thing. Even if you pay the same price that you're going to pay in a brick-and-mortar store, the fact that you didn't have to get up, get in the car, go to the store, buy the thing and bring it back. If you could get it the same day, you'd do it. Would you? Well, this is their new plan. And it's very threatening to brick-and-mortar retailers. I mean, already, the bookstores are suffering. San Francisco, which used to have dozens of independent bookstores, it doesn't even have Barnes & Noble, doesn't have Borders. This is a big city. There are big cities with no bookstores at all. So, in a way, this is Amazon's revenge, isn't it? Brick-and-mortar stores said, hey, wait a minute, these online retailers, they should be collecting sales tax. We have to. Why should they have that advantage? Okay, Amazon says, we'll do that. We'll go right up against you in your own backyard. We'll collect sales tax, but we'll be in your town and deliver it directly to people. Very interesting. I thought that was a great article. It's Farhad Manju writing in Slate this week, slate.com, if you want to read more. Here it comes. Stand back. Amazon, very interesting. Very interesting. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. Don and Dana Point. It's a little alliteration. Welcome, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Don.
Hi. Quick question. I want to either build or buy a high-end desktop to use for video and audio. I have Adobe Master Collection CS6.
Okay.
I want to be able to run Premiere Pro with all of its associated project disks.
Shouldn't have any problem. You need a big hard drive. Mostly you need lots of RAM. And an i7 would be good, a fast processor, because those Adobe products do take advantage of hyper-threading and multi-core processors.
I understand that. My question is whether to build or buy, and I also want to use it for a digital audio workstation.
Yeah, all of those, you know, they're all high-end applications that any high-end PC could handle. Nowadays, you should buy. Building was a great thing for hobbyists or somebody who wants to understand how computers work or somebody who wants to really spec out a machine. But all the current retailers like Dell.com, you can spec out the machine exactly as you want it. You just tell them, you customize it. Here's the advantage. If you build it, so you're going to go to, say, Newegg and buy all the parts, and it gets you put it together and it doesn't work, who are you going to call?
Okay, I understand. So I should look into the workstation level, most likely.
You know, they call them workstations. That's kind of an artificial distinction. The idea of a workstation is it's a higher-end thing. Yes, the things you're talking about are workstation quality. But really, any i7 with at least 8 gigs of RAM, you're going to want, I would suggest, two things that a lot of people don't look at. I would suggest having two hard drives. Your master drive, your boot drive, is a solid-state disk. That's what Windows and your apps go on. And that'll be smaller, you know, 128 or 256 gigs, because SSDs are more expensive. And then a terabyte or two of storage. That'll give you that more than the processor speed, that optimizes performance. And then for what you want to do, I would consider either a big screen or, better yet, if you can afford it, two side-by-side 27-inch screens. Those things are what really matter. I do. Well, I don't want to go that far. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Blame Kyle Benham, my musical director. Send your email to him. 8888-ASK-LEO. I do like people. I do. David, Mission Viejo, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, David.
Hi there. I'm a geek, too.
Yeah. So say it loud. Say it proud. I'm a geek. It's okay.
Yeah, I'm an electronic type. You, on yesterday's show, talked about speakers, and I just wanted to just clarify something on the electronic level, that there's 3 points to the speakers. One of them is the resistance. A resistor rated in ohms is independent of frequency. It's the same value of ohms no matter what the frequency. A capacitor or an inductor changes its resistance according to the frequency. And that's why they're called reactive. They react to the frequency. They change. The third point is that when you have a speaker, you're dealing with an electromechanical device. And as a result, every time you move that device and it recoils, well, that changes the impedance. And so there's these three factors. Now, you can put an ohm meter on a
Well, understand. I want to cut you off here. All we were talking about is the impedance rating of a speaker and whether you could mix a 6-ohm and an 8-ohm speaker.
Yes, but it depends upon the mechanical construction of the speaker.
Well, I understand how it's, but all the person buying the speaker cared about was what. Look, you're telling about how they figure this stuff out, which is great. But all the guy wanted to know is, can I mix speakers with different impedance ratings on the same amplifier? And your answer would be?
You can, in fact, use Ohm's law, and, for example, you can put two 4-ohm.
Nobody asked about Ohm's law. I appreciate it, David, but that's really all he wanted to know was he didn't care how they calculated the impedance. Now, the question I asked, and maybe you can help me with this one, is a lower impedance speaker better than a higher impedance speaker?
I think that the lower impedance speakers, like 4-ohms, they were made mostly for cars.
Ah.
Don't have the voltage to drive them.
Ah.
The bigger ohms had the home power, and they had more voltage to drive them, and so there you go.
That makes a lot of sense.
You have to get work out of the speaker. It has to move air.
No, I understand the electronics of all of this, but I just was, you know, I mean, see, you're a geek, and I'm a geek, and so I care about this stuff. But really, all the guy wanted to know is, when I have a 6-ohm speaker and an 8-ohm speaker, can I put them on the same circuit? And the answer is yes.
Yes, and also that the old amplifiers were less forgiving to things like, you know, short circuits.
Right.
Or bad impedance mismatches. And
right.
Things
yeah,
like-
Scott mentioned that, you know, there are potential problems. But those are modern amps are not going to get confused by all that. They're not going to overdrive it, or they're not going to get overdriven themselves. They get cutoffs.
Yes.
Stuff.
Okay. I told you I was a geek.
No, I love it. Thank you, David. You know what the real definition of a geek is? Is somebody who has a deep-rooted enthusiasm for a thing. So much to the point that most people would just go, oh, you really are over the top. And see, David's deep-rooted enthusiasm is for electronics, and I share that. I understand that. Sometimes geeks, you know, Comic-Con is it still going on? I think it's still going on in San Diego. This is a big comic book convention. Now, those people are geeks of a different kind. They're not electronics geeks. They're not computer geeks or digital geeks. They're comic book geeks. But let me tell you, they are a crazy bunch. You know, they really are geeks. They have this deep-rooted enthusiasm. They'll dress up as their favorite character. they'll go to standing-room-only panels on second-rate vampire television shows. You know, they're nuts. Oh, and of course, everybody in the chat room now is all the geeks in the chat room, because I think pretty much those are all geeks. Well, you know, Leo, Lawn Dog saying, you can put a 4-ohm speaker and a 6-ohm speaker together. What the amplifier will see in impedance is approximately 2 ohms. Most amplifiers these days can handle a 2-ohm load, and this especially applies for car amplifier, home amplifier. Still take the abuse. Remember, you get as close to 0 ohms as a direct trip. Thank you, both of you. I love and appreciate your geekiness. Sandy in Huntington Beach, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. LG flip phone died last night. I never thought I'd have to upgrade to a smartphone, and now I do.
Well, it's about time, Sandy. Welcome to the 21st century.
I know. I'm so far behind.
No.
It worked wonderfully, so why change, you know?
You know, let me tell you something. Everybody at Apple and Google and Microsoft are rubbing their hands about people like you, because the truth is the real growth in smartphones now has to come from people who've never owned them.
There's a lot of us.
And there's more of you than there are of the rest of us, so absolutely.
So what do you suggest? Simplicity.
Simplicity.
I know you've recommended the iPhone before.
Generally, for most people, the iPhone is the right choice.
Okay. I did go to Verizon last night with my little phone in paw here, and they also recommended the Lucid by LG.
No.
No, forget that.
If you're going to get an Android phone, don't get a junky Android phone.
See how much I don't know what is the
No,
difference.
Well, they know you don't know, and that's why they're going to show you the thing that they make the most money on.
And to get rid of it, too. So.
And maybe to get it out of the stock. Because really, now that's an affordable one. It's, I think, free with contract.
Oh, $50. Yeah.
It's not a great phone.
Okay, good. On to the next.
I mean, if you're going to get an Android phone, Verizon now has the Galaxy S3. And that's a good phone. That's the only Android phone at this point I would. Or the HTC One. I think they have that one as well. Those are good. Now, but I do think that for your first smartphone, well, look, it's very personal. There's not that much difference between any of these. They're all the same basic idea. In fact, that's why Apple's suing Samsung. They all have a giant glass screen that's touch sensitive. They all have buttons at the bottom, usually at least one. In the case of the iPhone, just one. They have cameras. They have applications on them, just like your computer does, which means you can do things like look up map locations or get GPS. You can take pictures and upload them to Facebook. There's a Facebook app, so you can even look at Facebook. There's a browser on all of these, and that means you can surf the net. You can get your email. They're all basically the same in that kind of functionality. So the difference is, at this point, are the kinds of things geeks will fight, you know, a 100-year war over, but really aren't that much to a normal person. A lot of people yesterday said you really should recommend the Windows phone to new users. And I do have to say that AT&T right now has a deal on the Lumia. It's down to $50, but not Verizon. In fact, Verizon I don't think has any good Windows phones.
Okay,
so if you're staying with Verizon, right?
Yes.
Good, because that gets me off the hook, because truthfully I don't really want to recommend a Windows phone. I would say, really, seriously, iPhone, Sandy. First of all, most people around you are using iPhones.
But I've heard it's not very quick.
Oh, it's snappy as heck. Who said that?
A couple of people. Well, at the Verizon store, so.
Really?
Yeah, they did.
They want you to buy the Lucid?
They were recommending the Lucid because...
Oh, the iPhone's too slow. You should get this Lucid.
Get it off our shelf.
Wow, they must. Well, you know that it is true that companies give incentives to these employees.
I'm sure they do.
Microsoft gives its $50 to everybody who sells a Windows phone. So I'm guessing that LG just came in there with a bag of cash. The Lucid is stuck on an old version of Android Gingerbread. It is in fact not very high quality camera. Oh, actually, no. I'm sorry. They do have a great camera and great performance. Cheap. It is 4G, which is nice. I just think the fact that it's an older operating system is a disadvantage. You know, Sandy, no one ever was sad that they bought an iPhone.
Want Siri?
Yeah, you want Siri. You'll like it.
Thanks, Leo, so much.
Take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. 888-827-5536. At the end of the last break, we were talking with a caller who wanted to replace her LG feature phone with a smartphone. She went to the Verizon store. She's on Verizon. And really, on Verizon, you have a couple of choices. You can go Android or you can go to iPhone if you're going to go with smartphones. They have Blackberries and stuff, but I wouldn't even look at those at that point. And she said that the Verizon guys said that the Lucid was faster. That's an Android phone. Now I understand what they're talking about. It's not a faster hardware. It's LTE. I should have realized that. Thank you to the chat room that pointed it out. The error of my ways. It's LTE. That means it takes advantage of their faster network. But if you're going from a feature phone to a smartphone, I don't think you're going to notice the difference. I do have to say that there is likely to be a new iPhone in September or October. And that might be cause for concern. You know, you buy an iPhone now, you're locked into that iPhone 4S for 2 years, watching the world go by. When you're this close to a new release, it's kind of depressing. But nonetheless, I think the iPhone 4S is great. And I think for your first smartphone, it's an excellent choice. I'll tell you the negatives. Screen is smaller and not as good as, well, I shouldn't say not as good. It's a good screen, but it's just 3.5 inches. The Galaxy S3, which would be my pick at Verizon, is LTE. Instead of a 3.5 inch screen, it's a 4.8 inch screen. It's thinner. Oh, is it thin? It's beautiful. It's light. It's running the latest version of Android Ice Cream Sandwich. There is a newer version just came out, but nobody has that yet except for the Google phone itself. I think Ice Cream Sandwich is fine. It will. I'm pretty sure you'll get Jelly Bean in the next few months, and that will really make this thing sing. It's a beautiful screen. In terms of apps, and I think that's a very important consideration, Android and iPhone have almost exact parity. There are some apps you can get on one you can't get on the other. There's some things you can do on one you can't do on the other. But it's a kind of a trade. For instance, on the Android phone, you can change keyboards. There's a variety of different keyboards that have different functionality. Some of them are preferable. Apple doesn't allow that. You have to use the Apple keyboard. And frankly, I think the Apple keyboard's not too good. It's hard to type on. Little things, too. You know, Apple often, people say, oh, they're such a great design company. Their user interface is second to none. Yeah, well, explain to me why the Apple keyboard is always in caps. Yeah, I guess because it looks like a real keyboard, but it's not a real keyboard. Just because your typewriter keys have capital letters on them doesn't mean your soft keyboard shouldn't. And that's one of the advantages of a on-screen keyboard is that when you're in lowercase mode, it can be lowercase letters. When you hit the caps key, it can go to caps, and you know what mode you're in. You cannot tell on the iPhone. There's a little light, you know. The key, you know, it's just a no-brainer. But the point being, maybe you like it, maybe you don't. You don't have a choice. This is how it's done on Apple's. On the iPhone, you're stuck with the keyboard. On Android phones, you can choose other keyboards. There's more functionality in some of the things on Android. On the other hand, without a doubt, app developers develop for the iPhone first. That's where all the money is. So new apps almost always come out first on the iPhone. And in general, the iPhone apps are pretty darn good. There's good and bad on Android. However, almost anything that I want to use, I can use on Android. I actually carry an Android phone day to day. I use the Galaxy S3. There's some other advantages Android has. You can put a new battery in it when the battery dies. You can't do that on an iPhone. So I always get a second battery when I buy an Android phone. Then I could take the back off when the battery, if should the battery die before the end of the day, I take the back off, pop in a new battery. I got a whole nother life ahead of me. On the iPhone, people spend a lot of money on external cases with batteries, which makes it big and clunky. I prefer not to do that. On the other hand, for your first smartphone, the iPhone is kind of the gold standard. You'll have more people around you who can help you. You're going to be in the mainstream. And there's a lot to be said, especially if you're new to something, to being in the mainstream. I prefer Android, but I would say it's a very personal choice. There are pros and cons on both sides. You probably should go into the store, play with both. I would not get the Lucid. Now, the Lucid's free. I'm asking you to spend $200. This is another point, and I suppose I should mention this. It's just human nature that we're aware of the bucks we're spending today as opposed to the bucks we're spending each month for the next 24 months. The real cost of any smartphone is the two-year contract, the month-to-month cost times 24. In most cases, we're talking $75 to $100 a month for 24 months, thousands of dollars. So I think a $200 savings on the phone is probably less important. You're going to have that phone for 2 years. I would get the fastest, bestest phone you can get right now because it's going to be out of date no matter what in 2 years. But it'll be less out of date if it's the most recent phone. The other thing to consider is that when you do choose a platform, Android or iOS or Windows or BlackBerry, you're starting to invest in applications. That's particularly true on Android and iOS. And those applications will only run on that platform. So if you've spent, and you should really think about it. I mean, I have more than 100 apps on my iPhone. That represents an investment of hundreds of dollars. That's a lot of money to throw away if I go to Android. So you might want to consider that, too. This choice has repercussions going on for years to come. Android, as somebody in the chat room is saying, somebody named iPhone 49688 says, is more confusing to new users, and I agree. I agree. And that's why generally for first-time smartphone buyers, I think the iPhone is the easy choice. It's the right choice. Mark, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, Mark.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call, sir.
Sure.
Actually, you answered my first question about the iPhone when you thought it was going to come out.
Yeah, well no one knows, and I got to be very clear It's all speculation. Apple's smart, unlike Microsoft. Apple doesn't say a word because they understand that anything they say will kill sales of the current phone.
Right, right. The other thing I was wondering was, I have an accent, and then as you can tell, I bought my wife the 4S for Christmas, and it wasn't quite as accurate with an accent. Is there a way to train the Siri?
And do you there think is not. And people with, for instance, we have a number of Scots who listen from Scotland, and the iPhone does not do well with Scottish accents at all. Now, you sound like you're, are you South African?
I am, yeah, spot on, yeah, 100%.
Your accent's very mild. I'm surprised Siri had trouble. I mean, if somebody's talking like this, it's very difficult for Siri to understand. It's, you know, the way Siri works is it's looking at waveforms. And you and I, our human brains are so good at disambiguating because we understand context. We're looking at the person. We can tell what they're talking about. Siri knows none of that. All it's doing is looking at a waveform. And if the waveform for greet does not match the waveform for great, no, it's not going to understand greet. Ah, it's greet. It's not going to understand that. So, and you're right. It should do some learning. Apple does offer Siri in different languages. I hope it will offer Siri in different accents. It should offer a, it does have a UK Siri, and I would presume, and you could choose this, by the way, so you should try it. I would presume that the UK Siri would do better with your accent.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give it a try. You said it's pretty light African accent. The other thing was my brother got an iPhone in about a month ago in South Africa, and it didn't seem to be work as well in South Africa. Is it because most of the internet speed? Does it need to have a very good internet connection to work?
Yeah. You know, you may be just discovering what people who use Siri day in, day out know, which is that Siri is far from perfect. Somebody did a survey, did some testing with Siri and found it to be accurate 62% of the time. That's really low. That means more than one out of three times it doesn't understand. And that's about right in my expectation. Now, it's a little better than Android. Android also has the same kind of voice dictation. The truth is, it's not Apple's fault or Google's fault. This is hard stuff to do. As I said, we understand context, we understand what you're talking about, so we can disambiguate words. Siri knows none of that. It doesn't understand anything. It's just looking at waveforms and trying to match. And it does it, as you have guessed, not locally on your phone, but off on the network. So poor network speed or network unreliability is going to further impair its ability. I think it's important to understand the limits of Siri and not expect too much. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, and home theater. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. If you want to talk tech, I want to talk about it with you. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. of A. Outside the U.S., use Skype to give me a ring. Okay, here. I'm going to take a chance because I'm not sure what's going on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, line five. Is this the guy we were just talking to?
Tom.
Is it Tom? Hey, Tom, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Okay, the board's a little screwed up, Kyle. I'm not sure what's going on. I'm going to go to line one. Thomas in Stamford, Connecticut. Hi, Thomas. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, what's happening?
What's going on? Hey, so I had a question. I am a college student. I'm a junior communications major.
Excellent.
And I'm an amateur broadcaster.
Awesome.
Yep, I do amateur podcast right on the side. And I kind of want to expose it a little bit more and really get into this a little bit. You know, get used to doing a podcast a little bit more. And,
great way. I mean, if you're a communications major, what a great way to get on-the-job experience.
Exactly. And I took your advice, you know, talk about niche audiences. You know, I definitely think I found, like, a niche audience. And it's
what's
going
your
really
subject matter?
Pokemon.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a niche, all right. But you know what? That's a great niche. Do you focus on the card game or the cartoon? What do you focus on?
The card game.
Card game, okay.
Yep, I play competitively, and I decided, well, might as well do a podcast and, you know, use my communication skills and do a podcast about it.
Get ready for this. You know there is competition in this area. There's other Pokemon podcasts.
I know.
In fact, I met the guy. I don't know if it's you or I met somebody who does a Pokemon gaming podcast. Was that you?
No, I don't. This is the first time I'm talking to you, man.
So a couple of weeks ago, a guy came to visit us who, around about your age, who's also doing a Pokemon card game podcast. He's a competitor as well. So
yeah.
As niche as you might think that is, there are other people doing it.
I know.
Isn't that awesome?
A couple other guys there, but it's going really well. I'm happy with doing it. But I wanted to ask you, how can I really expose it a little bit more? Really, because all that I'm doing is I'm recording it on Audacity, recording over my friend over Skype.
Awesome.
And I upload it. And I'm using Libsyn as my hosting service.
Great.
And I'm using Blogger.
Great.
I really want to make sure I get the maximum amount, because eventually, after I do this, I'm going to do another podcast. And that's going to be either about video games and also accessibility. I'm legally blind as well.
Great. Perfect. So you're doing a very smart thing, which is you're focusing on areas that you have an interest in, an expertise in, and a passion for. And absolutely, that's what it's all about.
Exactly. I get it from my brother. My brother's a big internet celebrity. And so
is he? Who is somebody we would know?
You might. He works with Machinima.
Ah. See it, Red versus Blue?
No. He works with Legos. He does Lego animation.
Oh, how cool is that?
And very popular.
Yeah. So good. So maybe the whole family's going to be in this here.
Well, just me and my brother. We're the communication. He's the video guy. I'm the audio guy.
That's great. Is your big brother a little brother?
He's a big brother.
Yeah, okay. So it's okay to be a little bit in his shadow, just briefly.
Exactly.
Not for long, just for a little bit. Then you got to beat him. I love it. That's great.
So do you have any advice for me about maybe how can I...
Well, you know, your brother did an interesting thing. Machinima is a aggregator. They do a lot of different shows. In fact, they're one of the biggest out there. But, you know, it's interesting. When you're on Machinima, you're in there with a lot of other shows. They probably talked to your brother and said, look, we'll help you promote your show.
Yep.
And maybe they do. I don't know. But you're not alone. You're in a space, you're in a space with other gaming podcasts. So that's a good thing. But it's one route. And this is the route that a number of companies like Mevio, Revision 3, and others used. They talk to people, say, hey, we'll help you promote yourself, we'll help you with production, maybe we'll give you a little cash, we'll help you sell. That's a reasonable route. And so one way for you to do your show, Thomas, is to buff it up to the point where you could go to somebody like Machinima and say, would you carry my show?
And I've thought about doing that, but I want to make sure before I start, you know, if I any approach anybody, first of all, like, I want to make sure that I have good content.
Exactly. And buff it up. Exactly.
Yeah, I'm at the amateur stage where I'm just doing, you know, just having fun, basically.
Well, and I would say, by the way, I would say that no matter what your plan is, the best way to promote yourself is to make the best possible show. Right?
Go a little bit more professional.
Go for content. Make the well, it doesn't have to be slick. That's not the case. But it has to, you know who your audience is, probably better than most, certainly better than I. So target, you know, what we do on my podcast network is we have a very, you did the right thing. You pick a narrow topic because that topic is a topic you have a passion for, you understand. You also understand the audience. And you target that audience. You super serve that audience. You give them what they want. So it doesn't necessarily mean slicker. In fact, often it doesn't mean slicker. If they're not interested in slick, then that doesn't help you. What they're interested in, I would guess, is not slick, but content. Now, it can't be so bad that it's annoying for them to listen to.
No, it's definitely not.
It has to have decent quality, good enough so that they're not paying attention to the quality. But it doesn't have to be any slicker than that. What you should focus on is content that grabs them, content that makes it so they have to listen. And
okay.
You know what that is, because that's your niche.
Yeah.
That's why when somebody says, oh, I'm trying to think of what to do a podcast about, It always makes me nervous because that means there's nothing that they have a particular passion for. They're trying, and this is why, by the way, broadcast television doesn't do as well as podcasts in that respect, right, because it's people who don't have a passion for something. Serve ESPN is a success because the people who run ESPN love sports.
Mm-hmm.
People who do Pokemon podcasts should darn well love Pokemon. Right?
And this is just like the first step in my plan. Like, my next step after doing this show is to move on to a bigger show, because it's just a very narrow audience.
Yeah.
I want to be a bigger audience. So, because my brother's videos, you know, he's very popular with everybody.
Does he make money? Does he make money on it?
What's that?
Does he make a good living?
For right now, he's trying to get out of my parents' house.
So he's not quite making enough money to support himself.
I
ask you that because I think this is very important, because I think people look at somebody who's really successful on YouTube and they say, wow, they must be doing great. I bet they live in a mansion in Hollywood Hills. We're not talking network television money. We're not talking movie star money.
We're talking internet money.
We're talking internet money. And it's very important that people be realistic. Maybe if you're lucky, you can move out of your parents' house.
Well, I don't want... This is just for fun, actually.
No, I know. I'm saying this for other people. You are realistic because you're watching your brother. You understand.
Yeah. Yeah. I plan to work in PR.
Yeah. And you're doing this to perfect for fun and
exactly.
To perfect your skills. If you're going to do your own internet media podcasts, for want of a better word, you do it because you love it. You do it because it's fun. You do it because it's a hobby, because you'll polish skills. Maybe you'll promote something that you do. You know, our photo guy who's going to join us at 33 after the hour, he does a podcast not to make money. He might cover his costs. He does a podcast because it promotes his business as a photographer. You're doing a podcast because you want to get better at communications because of your future profession. Those are all reasonable expectations. But I hear people say, you know, I'm going to do a Pez Dispenser podcast, and I'm going to have a house at Malibu. No. I'll talk a little more about how you can promote it when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Since you became a VR person, it's like your problems have all worsened. Your paranoia casts aspersions on the truth, you know. And they'll just put you in a spotlight.
See, it's no good being famous. It stinks. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thomas is on the line. Hey, wait a minute. That's not Thomas. There's Thomas. He's on the line from Stamford, Connecticut. And he wants to know how to make his podcast appeal more, raise awareness. By the way, not an easy thing to do, Thomas. It's a challenge I have. It's not easy. You know, one of the reasons I do this radio show, I appear on places like CNN and Live with Kelly, is hoping to promote my podcasts. It doesn't work very well, by the way.
I know it's hard, but I think I'm just ready. I'm ready to move on to a more not amateur and more...
In general, I would say that... the key is to know your audience well enough to know where they are so that you can go there and let them know you exist. Participate in other Pokemon communities. And now you got to do this. You can't be Mr. Spammerino here. You can't spam them, but just let them know. I presume that you are active in other Pokemon communities
Yeah. As much as I'd like to be, transportation's hard, but I went to Nationals this past month. It was a lot of fun. I told all the people who I, you know,
That's the way to do it. You know, go to forums where they're talking about Pokemon and make sure in your signature it says host. What's the name of your show?
It's called All Pokemon Considered.
Perfect. I love it. Host All Pokemon Considered with a link. You know, just that's the kind of thing. Participate. And you can have it in your signature. That's not not considered spamming.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would do. The key is, the thing to understand that's a little different about new media, internet media, is that instead of in broadcast media, what you're trying to do is build audience. You're trying to get a larger number of ears and eyeballs. In new media, you're trying to build community. You're trying to build the conversation. These audiences are way smaller, right? So what you're hoping to get is a more engaged audience, because I could tell you something. You might have a million kind of people who kind of listen, kind of care, versus, say, 1,000 people who really listen and really care. And those 1,000 people are more valuable to you, more valuable to advertisers, more valuable to the podcast, because they're a community, as opposed to just the people who are watching. So focus on that. Focus on not numbers, but building community, building an engaged community. And I can tell you, there is nothing more powerful than an engaged community. And it's not the size. It's the degree of engagement. So start thinking that way. Not how do I get more people to listen, but how do I get the people who are listening more engaged, more involved, more part of the conversation? How do I draw them in? How do I make them mine, for want of a better word? You know, make them fans. That's your challenge. Good luck. I think it's great, Thomas, that you're doing this. It really makes a difference. And I tell you, it is much more satisfying. As someone who has been a broadcaster for 36 years. So I've done it both ways. It is very wonderful and satisfying and thrilling to have a smaller but engaged audience, an audience that cares, that's involved. That is amazing. That is a gift. You know, and you can have a television show that millions watch. But give me a small internet show that tens of thousands care about, and I'll take that every day. Clyde in Columbus, Indiana. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you. Thanks.
I'll give you a little backstory, and then I'll shut my trap. I had a hard drive crash. I've got a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old and 25,000 pictures. And I did the right thing, and I was backing up with Time Machine.
Okay.
So I got everything back. But I'm nervous now because I'm not doing the offsite backup thing. A friend of mine gave me an old computer, and I was thinking about making it an offsite backup station. And I was wondering if you had any advice on how to make that happen. I kind of thought about using a service like Crash Plan, but I'm a little nervous about using a free service or using a service that could essentially shut down.
So you're really asking the right question. Have you lost data now or no?
No, I had it backed up with Time Machine.
So you're all right. But you're right. What if you'd had a fire? Time Machine is right sitting next to your computer, and they would have all gone. So a good right. backup strategy. I'm gonna quote my friend Peter Krog, who's a photographer, and did a wonderful website of best practices for photographers. And one of the things he talks about is backup. He's the kind of the king of digital asset management. And he calls it 3-2-1 backup. Three copies of everything. Now, I think a lot of times people say, oh, I had a copy on my hard drive, but I backed it up, so I'm going to delete the copy on my hard drive. Well, that's not a backup. You have one copy of something. That's not a backup. That's the original. That's it. That's not a backup. So, and he says three copies. Not even two, three. Three is a lot more safe than two because you can have the original and that crashes, and then you're hoping your backup is there. But what if it's not? What if it you thought it was a good backup, but it's not? Or maybe, you know, when the crash happened, it happened to both the, you know, you need a third. Much, much less likely that all three will be bad. The two is two different forms of media. This is kind of interesting. He says it shouldn't all be like, don't put all your eggs in one basket. It shouldn't all be USB drives or DVDs. It should be both. You should have two different kinds. This is all about, you know, peace of mind, absolute security. You might say, well, that's going overboard. And in many cases, it would be. But this is for people like wedding photographers. You lose somebody's wedding pictures, you might as well retire because you're never going to get another gig. So this is when it really counts. And then the one, so we got three copies, two different forms of media. And the one is, and this is the one you're worried about, off-site. If you rely only on Time Machine, I've heard many stories about Time Machine failing. If you rely only on local backups, I have a friend, it's very sad, she was a novelist, very famous novelist. About 15 years ago, there was a big fire in the Oakland Hills, and all the homes burned, including hers and her backups, her novel, everything gone. That's because she didn't have that one off-site. You got to store it away from the originals, just in case the worst happens. So you're absolutely right, Clyde. Those baby pictures, if they're precious to you, if those financial records, whatever, you got to look at off-site. So how do we do that? Well, there are a lot of different ways. You mentioned Crash Plan. That's a service. Carbonite, our advertiser, that's another good service. These are designed to be as simple as Time Machine. You kind of set them up and forget them, but off-site. And I would never use them as – remember the three part. They're just one of the three backups. You should have an original and two backups. You should have one local. It's fine to have an external drive, for instance, that's always backing up. But that off-site's important. There's there are Jungle Disk. There's Amazon backups. There's all sorts of third-party backups. It depends on a number of considerations, including cost and complexity. We'll talk more when we come back. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Carly Jepsen's, Carly Rae Jepsen's, Hey, I Just Met You.
You took your time.
With the call. But all of the clips are from... Star Wars. That is just weird. I've heard a number of these. This is a current kind of, we call them a meme. When an idea becomes really, kind of takes over the world. An idea whose time has come. They're memes, and sometimes they're earworms. You just can't get rid of them. They kind of, the neon cat or chocolate rain. And then, but this, the meme that's happening lately on YouTube, it's very interesting, is taking a song. First one I heard was Gotye's, or Gotye, whatever you pronounce Gotye. It's using President Obama to do the lyrics, all cut up. That's the first I've heard of that one, Carly Rae Jepsen. And it's it's a challenge. The person who's doing them says, what would be the hardest thing I could ever think of? Oh, yeah. Let's do I Just Met You, but only with Star Wars characters. So you'd have to find each word in the song in Star Wars. I don't know how they even do that. That's crazy. That's crazy. Crazy talk. All right. Let's say hello right now to our photographer guy, Chris Marquardt. Actually, before we get to your topic, Chris. Chris is the host of the Tips from the Top Floor podcast. He does photographic workshops, really great photographer, but also a geek. You worked at HP for years.
I'm a geek, yes, I admit.
So it's perfect for this show. So before we get to your topic,
any geek questions for me?
I do, which is what should the left hand be doing when you're taking pictures, which is a great question. Clyde was asking a question that I think every photographer has to address, which is off-site backup. So I'm sure your images are very important to you, Chris.
Absolutely, and I've actually been thinking about my backup strategy for a long time because I once lost half a year worth of pictures due to a disk crash, and now I'm a belts and suspenders guy. I have everything at least threefold. I have a mirrored disk in my big computer that has all my pictures on it, so if one of those two disks dies, there's no problem. Then I have a Time Machine backup that constantly backs up to a network-attached storage. And then I do an offsite backup that I pretty much have a disk that I swap with another disk every other week. So I take that with me that has like my business data and my images on it. And
that's so another way. I was talking about online offsite, but that's another way, which is merely to take, have two duplicate external drives that you swap. Take one to the office. Yeah, that's another way to do it. If you have a lot of data, that's probably the most economical. Yeah, yeah.
I don't even take that second disk home. It lives on the backseat of my car,
Perfect.
It's just off-site. It's not in the same building.
Right. And that's good, especially if you have terabytes of data, because you don't want to do online backup for a ton of stuff. It's just too expensive and too time-consuming. All right, Chris, now, thank you for that, and I hope that helps you, Clyde. Now, let me ask you about left-handed photography.
This is not really about left-handed. I thought of how to title this. What's the role of your left hand in photography? And if you look at a DSLR or any bigger kind of camera, but also at the medium-sized cameras with bigger lenses on them, the grip, the design of the camera kind of suggests that that's how you hold it, right? That's where you hold the
camera.
You
hold it in your right hand and
the camera.
Yeah, your right hand holds the camera and your index fingers on the button. So what do?
Yes, and
you wave with your left hand. You keep it on your hip. What do?
Well, the thing is, the right hand, if you hold the entire weight of the camera in your right hand, you will have a not very stable camera because the hand has to do lots of work plus pressing the button. So holding it steady is really difficult. No, you have a left hand. That left hand is actually there to hold the entire weight of the camera, believe it or not. So when I see photographers who have their cameras at their outstretched arm, why not use that left hand and rest the camera on it? Your right hand is then free to direct the camera, to press all the buttons, to take the actual shot. But the left hand is carrying the weight. And then stick your left elbow in against your rib cage. And this way you will have just so much more stability when you shoot pictures, that you can really get those pictures that are hard to get without camera shake usually. This way you kind of turn into a tripod of some sort.
You know, I almost always, when I look at somebody taking a picture, if I see somebody using their left hand to cup the camera, to hold the lens, I know they're more serious about photography than if their left hand is kind of just floating around. That tells me this person knows what they're doing.
Right, and there are just a few more little tips to get more stability, because it's really about stability. It's about getting the shot without moving the camera while you take that shot. Again, elbows in, look at your stance, feet firm on the ground, that'll help. Don't smash that shutter button in, just roll your finger. If you have to take really long exposures, like let's say a tenth of a second or longer, lean against something. That will take a lot of motion out of it. The other thing is, if you have a viewfinder, look through the viewfinder, because then you will touch the camera to your eyebrow and that will give you more stability right there. So all these things together will help you take pictures that you wouldn't get any other way, because you get just so much more stability by those little tiny things, but combined they will make you just such a better photographer when it comes to holding the camera steady.
Titus in our chat room says he uses his left hand to hold the fries. That's probably okay, too.
if you're a hungry photographer and someone just gave you fries, that's okay.
Chris Marquardt, always a pleasure to talk to you. Chris is at Chris Marquardt, MarquardT.com. You'll find that on our show notes, TechGuyLabs.com. He's coming to the States to do his yearly workshops. You can find out more about that at discoverthetopfloor.com. And when are we going to do? We're going to have Chris in after the radio show.
August the 18th.
On August the 18th, he's going to come in after the radio show and do how many hours, you think? 8 hours of nonstop camera day.
I don't think 8 hours, but we're probably looking at 3 to 4.
All right.
3 to 4 hours, maybe.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Just some interesting photographers to talk to. Just a little longer photo thing there.
I think it'll be a lot of fun. It'll be kind of a workshop here on the Twit. This is on our podcast network, on our Twit network. August the 18th, Saturday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern time. Chris Marquardt, as long as we can keep him. We'll see if we could stretch it to 8 hours.
you can tie me down and then carry photographers in, and I'll do my best.
We will. Thank you, Chris. Great to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Take care. Oh, let's remind everybody, we do have a little assignment. It's not a competition. It's just for fun, but it's a great excuse to go out and take pictures. We're looking for people to take pictures to illustrate the concept or the idea of...
What was it? Barbecue.
Barbecue. Because it's the next week, you think we'll be able to review these? How are we doing?
I think, I haven't really looked today, but I think we're getting closer to something that we have.
Well, here's your chance. We'll give you another week at least to take a picture illustrating the concept, the idea of barbecue. Oh, there's a nice one. Look at that. And here's how you submit it. You upload it to Flickr, which is a free photo site run by Yahoo, Flickr without an E, F-L-I-C-K-R. And, purdy. This is some nice pictures of grilling meat. But you don't have to be that literal. There are other possibilities. Do tag it with BBQ, just three letters, BBQ, so they'll know that it's your submission. And in a couple of weeks, maybe next week, we'll review our top three picks and talk about what makes them good photographs. Just some recognition, no prize. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. know about Gazelle, right? Should I talk about? I'm going to talk about Gazelle.com. Do you want to come in here, Chad? You can come in here. You got a question for me? Thank you. I'll check it. Thank you. Chad, I am so grateful. So grateful. Let us talk about what to do with your old stuff when you're done with it. You want to get those out of the way. You know, I know a lot of us, I'm guilty of this. What we do is we throw it in the closet, right? Old MacBooks, old iPhones, old Android phones. We just throw them in the closet. And they collect dust, and they lose value day after day. Pretty soon, it's just a pile of junk. Why do that when you could go to Gazelle.com and get cold, hard cash for all those fine things sitting in your closet there? Here's what happens. Gazelle.com. Select your product, iPhone, iPad, iPod, Apple TV, laptops from Apple, desktops from Apple, Apple displays, Blackberries. Oh, this would be a great chance. Now, quick. HTC, Motorola, Samsung, and LG cell phones, Nokias as well. So let's say, oh, you know what I have I'd love to get some money for? I have an old Nokia. It's unlocked. It is, there it is, the N9. It is no-nos applause because it's really never been used. Yes, I have all the stuff. Continue. Water, free of water damage? You bet. You know me. $200! I'll take it. That's a new phone right there. So here's the deal. That is a 30-day guarantee. So that price is good for the next 30 days. So you could try this before. You're not making a commitment. They will pay shipping on anything worth more than a buck. They will wipe your data for you. Once you decide you want to check out, you get to choose. How do you want that money? And you've got a number of choices, including, of course, check, PayPal. But I'd suggest getting the Amazon gift card. The nice thing about that is you get an additional 5% on the value. So suddenly that's $210. Nice. Gazelle.com. Why? You know, these things are not gaining in value. They're dropping in value. All the time. The sooner you sell your gadget, the more you'll get. At least get that 30-day quote. Gazelle.com. Gazelle! I love them! I love them! Great stuff. Just go there and, you know, see what it's worth.
All right, Leo, you got the extra minute here, too.
You rock.
You rock.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. You got a question, a comment, a suggestion, want to correct me, all of that. 8888-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. Mark is in Tarzana. He's our next caller. Mark, Leo, you know what? My computer has frozen, so I'll let you pick that one up for me. Kyle. Mark, Leo Laporte.
Yeah, you got it.
Hey, Mark.
Thanks for taking the call.
My pleasure. What can I do for you?
My son is going to film school starting in the fall.
Oh, aren't you proud?
Yes, I am. And I got to buy him a new laptop and what have you. I think we narrowed it down to the 15-inch MacBook Pro, but we're worried about storage.
Well, first of all, excellent choice. He'll probably be using Final Cut. Check with the film school because the film school may, in some case, be focused on, say, Adobe Premiere or Avid Studio. And so that might be an issue. But as long as they're Final Cut, that's a perfect choice.
They let you use either the new version of Final Cut or Avid Media Composer.
Perfect. And you can run Avid on a Mac. So that's good.
Okay.
So what is your question? Oh, you said external storage. Well, now, or extra storage. How big is the hard drive you're getting now?
Well, we were looking at the, since he needs an Ethernet port, we were looking at the last version of the MacBook Pro.
Okay.
So the 750 gig hard drive.
That's pretty darn big. You will be able to, and I would suggest doing this anyway, bring a couple of things. An external drive, fast external drive. Now, this MacBook Pro that you're looking at, does it still have FireWire on it? I'm trying to see here. You're looking at the 15-inch?
Right.
Let me look at these. Because the issue is going to be USB is not fast enough for video recording and editing. You want at least FireWire. I'll tell you, I'll be honest. If you could see your way clear to the Retina display, which is a few hundred bucks more, you're going to get a much better display with more room for him to work with. Final Cut does use the Retina. And you're going to get an extra Thunderbolt port. And then you could get a Thunderbolt drive, which would be... Now, again, these are all of this is pricier considerably. But the Thunderbolt drive is going to be adequate speed to do all the editing he needs to do. And so that would be... Go ahead.
The question is, the solid-state drive, is that going to be, you know, the even if I get the 512 solid-state?
No, you don't. You get the 256. You don't need to get a giant one because that's going to be for the operating system and the apps. And all his data, you know what, even if you got a terabyte drive inside, if he's doing big projects, he's going to be using external disks for it anyway. So what you're really looking for is a fast external connection.
We were looking at the LaCie 6 terabyte Thunderbolt drive.
Yeah, that's okay. So obviously, price is no object because he's going to be the next Spielberg, and you are going to reap the rewards of your munificence, Dad.
Not quite that, but
that's expensive. But that's even maybe more than he needs. But certainly, not a bad choice at all. In that case, you definitely want a Thunderbolt. Interface. Okay. He will be able to use that for all of his editing. I would also get, and I recommend, a fast USB thumb drive. I use on my MacBook Retina the Kingston Hyper X. Not very expensive. 64 gigs is $100. But it's big enough for him to take it back and forth to class to bring his edit lists and things like that. And he could wear it around his neck and, you know, easier to bring that around than that ginormous six terabyte drive.
Okay.
So then, so you do have Thunder. They're telling me that you do have, I have to look, I haven't seen the new 15 inches. There is Thunderbolt on those new 15 inches? Yes, there is. Good news. So that's a, and you might want to, okay, so this is not a bad choice. Get the, I would get the solid state drive. 256 is fine. You don't need to spend money on the faster processor. The 2.6 is fine. I would get the highest res display, add $100 for that. And I would also get an external display. So when he gets back to his dorm room, he has a 27 inch. That's nice to have.
Right.
The only
problem I saw with the Retina display, it doesn't have an Ethernet port.
It's, you know, for $30, you can buy the Ethernet connector. That's fine.
Okay.
You don't need the Retina if you're going to spend a lot of money on this external drive, you're going to spend a lot of money on an external monitor. The Retina is not going to be that big a difference.
Okay.
I like the Retina, but it's premium priced because it's kind of the premium product. I'm just pricing out, and you're already spending a lot of money. The 15-inch with a 256-gig solid-state drive, the high-res anti-glare widescreen display, a Thunderbolt display, that's another $1,000. You're talking already $36.98 from Apple. That's a lot of money. And then you're going to add that 6-terabyte enclosure.
It's about $800.
Oh, that's not bad. We got to populate it, remember. You got to put drives in there.
No. There was, we saw it at the Apple store, was a 6-terabyte LaCie.
Wow.
$799 with the 2 3-terabyte drives.
Huh. Wow. That's great. That's fantastic. Yeah, you're right.
That's what we're looking at.
The too big, they call it.
Right.
And it is. It's $600 for 4 terabytes. $749 for 6 terabytes, and this is a fairly fast drive, Thunderbolt connection. That is a great choice. I'm impressed. That's an amazing price. So now you're spending a lot of money, but he's got a high-end workstation. You could save the external display for next year, things like that.
Right.
Remember, though, this external drive, the way they're getting 6 terabytes is they're striping, not mirroring, so there's no redundancy on this drive. So you still need backup.
Yeah, we can't figure out yet.
Well, there's a couple of things you could do. You could daisy chain another drive onto that and have it mirror it. That would be easy to do. The truth is, when you're doing video editing, you can't back up all of that video. It's terabytes. So, you know, you might keep the original cards that it was recorded on in case of the disaster or whatever. That's a great price. 6 terabytes for $749. I'm impressed. You get two of them. You could daisy chain them. And then one's backup, one's real. And then I would still get this HyperX or some fast USB drive so that he can ferry files back and forth from the lab.
Fantastic.
I think you are a good dad, Mark. Well done.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, my pleasure. And, you know, that's not a bad thing to get a kid into these days. Yeah, I'm a filmmaker. Okay. Wow, that is a good price. 327 megabytes a second, 6 terabytes on the Thunderbolt port. You do have to spend another $50 for a Thunderbolt cable. It always gets me. But you can, just like FireWire, you can have another Thunderbolt cable and another drive off of that he can use for backup. CR1 in the chat room saying, Leo, put down the credit card. You're right. You know me so well. I'm about to click buy. Add that to my cart. Too bad I don't have Mark to buy it for me. Tom in Orange, California. Tom, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. Welcome.
Hey, my wife and I, we run a small charity. We sell products for Cambodia and then send the proceeds back to Cambodia.
Good man.
We get requests now and then from service clubs to do little presentations. And looking maybe for a projector, small, because we've got to move it around, easy to use. We're not the smartest people. And cheap, too, because we'd rather have the money, I suppose, go to Cambodia than...
Sure you would. Sure you would. I just bought, you know, a friend of mine is a school teacher. Her projector died. She uses it all the time in the school, and it's kind of a charitable donation. I got her a projector. Wasn't very expensive. It was an Epson. Epson makes excellent business class. It's a PowerPoint projector, basically, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. I want to say P90. Let me look up the model number here if I can find my orders. If you just look at Epson, there's a broad range of prices. All of them are good. A good choice, I think. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hello! Welcome to hour number 3 of the Tech Guy program. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking about computers. We're talking about digital photography, cell phones, of course. Cord cutting, home theater, all that. So you know what cord cutting is? It's not, no, not when the... Not umbilical cord, cable cord cutting. You know, when you don't have a cable or a satellite bill anymore, you just watch all your stuff on the internet? We'll talk about that, too. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you've got a question you want to ask or a comment you want to make, let's go to Huntington, West Virginia. And Walter. Hey, Walter. Leo Laporte here.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, Walter.
I spoke to you yesterday, actually, asking you how to make a clone of a DVD.
Right.
I've been thinking it over, and what I really want to do is take all my DVDs, of which I have many,
yeah,
put them onto a portable hard drive in such a way that I can later, if necessary, make new DVDs. So you recommend clone DVD. Will clone DVD do that too?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think probably. So here's a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you care about the extras, the menus, all of that stuff? Just want the movie?
Well, I what it is a bunch of excerpts from many shows over many years. So I want everything on the disc that's there.
Ah, so when you... that's right. You said yesterday that this is stuff you made.
Right. Right.
And so you didn't really put a menu on it. It's just a disk full of stuff.
Exactly.
In that case, what I would suggest is that you rip it to your hard drive, store it on your hard drive. You can always reauthor a disk from the ripped thing. There are programs like, for instance, DVD Shrink. The idea of DVD Shrink is it'll take a commercial DVD, put it on your hard drive in a form that you could recreate the commercial DVD, but you could also play it from the hard drive as if it were the same thing. And it allows you to take out menus and stuff. But you don't really need anything that fancy. I would suggest a free program called Handbrake. Everybody should have a copy of this anyway. Handbrake.fr is the website.
Okay.
And this is a DVD ripper. Now, yours it's not going to have a problem with. If you do want to rip commercial DVDs, you'll need to get an additional program that's also free called the VideoLAN Client, or VLC. And then what this will do is, now this does do transcoding, but I think that's fine. Your main purpose is to get this on the hard drive and watch it from the hard drive.
Yes, but later make new DVDs.
But as secondary concern, you might want to make a DVD down the road.
Exactly.
So the reason this is not perfect for making clones is it's going to transcode it into MPEG-4. Which is not the same format stored on a DVD. DVDs use MPEG-2. But MPEG-4 is more compact, looks better. It's a better choice for watching from a hard drive.
I see.
You can then later reauthor a DVD, but it'll have to be retranscoded to MPEG-2. The truth is, I don't think you're going to burn DVDs again. I think you're kind of done.
Maybe.
Yeah, I understand you're wanting to preserve that as an option. And frankly, you always have that as an option.
Okay, very good.
There are, the negative on this is because you're transcoding it and then retranscoding it, you're going to lower the quality. If you do make another DVD, you'll make it a little bit lower quality.
Oh, I see.
So if it's a secondary concern, I'm not so much worried. There are ways to create images, what's called an ISO image of that DVD.
Oh.
And...
Well, That's what the original one I read, clone DVD, does make ISO.
Yeah.
It's copy DVD to ISO files onto hard drive.
Yep. So that will do it exactly. And that does it without transcoding. It keeps it in MPEG-2 format.
Oh, I see.
So it's kind of complicated, but the gist of the matter is if you never thought you wanted to put it on a DVD again, I would transcode it to MPEG-4. It's going to be smaller, more compact. It's going to look just as good off the hard drive. But if it were a high priority to create an identical disk out of it, then you might want to use an image burner like clone DVD, because that will keep it in the same format. Not an ideal format for hard drive playback. It's my opinion that physical media is dead. I think it's a vestigial thing now that people have DVDs and look at Netflix. Netflix really wants you to stop subscribing to DVDs by mail. They want you to stream everything. So do the movie companies, because piracy is less of a concern. And I think for a long time, many of us kept our music, for instance, on a hard drive. We've kind of given up CDs in many cases, but let's say you kept it on a hard drive. You still have a physical copy. Even in that case, we're moving away from physical copies on the hard drive. We're using cloud storage. It's somebody else's problem. So I think the idea of keeping stuff on plastic is kind of over. That's just my thought anyway. You could argue with me. 8888, ask Leah. Let's go to Indianapolis. Steve's on the line. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Mr. Lepore. Finally got in. I have been probably about 7 months without my Mac. I had an old iBook G4 from 2006. It went out on me back in early January. The video card went out.
Yep.
I was preparing to get a Mac over the iPad, and I looked at the Airs early this year versus the 13-inch Pro, and that screen got me on the Air. Then I had advice from other friends that are IT people and so on say, this is a transitional period. Don't get it. You know, wait. Just get the iPad Retina display and have it hold you over. However, you know, I like to edit photos. I know the iPad can edit photos, but I like to do hardcore raw editing like Photoshop and Lightroom.
Yeah, an iPad will not do that, yeah.
Exactly. iPad hasn't gotten there yet.
It's JPEG only. They don't do RAW files.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And so I decided to, when they went refurbished recently, when they brought in the new Ivy Bridge processors, the Pro and iMacBook Air, I said, okay, I'll get a refurb MacBook Pro or Air for $930 before tax.
Good deal.
And I got more advice. Well, this is transitional. You might not be happy.
Everything's transitional. Name me a computer product that's not transitional.
Thank you.
What do you mean it's transitional? Oh, no. We're never going to make a better computer than this one. If you're waiting for the last computer they'll ever make that's never going to get better, you're going to be waiting a long time.
Well, I figure if I get the glossy 13-inch refurb MacBook
that's
Pro.
That's fine. It's fine. Now, admittedly, there are faster processors now, and there will be faster down the road.
Right.
Perhaps they're going to be Retina displays. Certainly the 15-inch Retina display is mind-bogglingly gorgeous. But And for a photographer, that's perhaps a consideration, but it's expensive. It's twice as much.
Yeah.
More than.
And I've been attracted to the Air since I went to the Apple store months ago and compared the two. I spent 45 minutes. I actually picked it up, closed it, looked at the two, and, you know, I wouldn't mind paying a little bit more for the newer Air that's got the two Thunderbolt ports. And make it 8 gig of RAM. I think, you know, but let me ask you this. If I get the 13-inch refurb, would that hold me over for at least 4 years and then put a solid state in it later? That's where I was going.
It has solid state in it. You mean more hard drive, bigger hard drive?
No, I mean the 13-inch
Pro.
MacBook Pro with the optical drive. I was planning to get the refurb model that it just recently got. They take the new models, put them in refurb.
You know, the big difference in the new MacBook Pro and the old one, besides those extra ports, is the processor, as you say, Ivy Bridge now, Sandy Bridge, the older ones.
Right.
That's not a huge difference. It gives you a few benefits, USB 3, for instance.
Right.
No, I think, you know, it depends on price. Your friends are right. It's transitional because everything's transitional. There's always going to be something better. I guess what they might be saying, what you could reasonably say, is there's going to be something better soon. Well, we know what the something better soon is now because Apple has shipped the newer MacBook Pros. So you can make a rational decision now. You know what you're choosing between. I can't make that decision for you. I agree. The refurb older model is probably all you need. It's a great deal. If price is a consideration, go for it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Nothing's going to last you 4 years, however.
Have I told you about ShareFile?
If you're an assistant man or you're an IT,
turn down the noise. That guy talking, he really distracts me. I want to tell you about ShareFile.
This is how I share files. Well, you know how I tell you, I've shown you this before. It's so funny. I got an email from Premiere saying, hey, somebody downloaded some of your commercials. Is that okay? And I said, yeah, because I show the share file thing on. And people just say, oh, I want to do that. You can do this. So what is ShareFile? ShareFile is a better way to share files. Oh, there you go. Because it's designed for business by Citrix. These guys know how to secure it. They know how to make it very usable. It's HIPAA compliant with all federal regulations. This thing is good. And I was using another solution, a more consumer-oriented solution, and I had problems, frankly. For instance, there was a guy at one of the stations that would delete it after he got it. And I said, don't delete it. Other people are using it. He said, well, it takes up space on my hard drive. I said, don't delete it. So finally, we went to ShareFile. That's the wrong URL. Let me show you the one we got. There you go. That's it. And I've been so, so happy. I want you to try it yourself. ShareFile lets you share files of almost any size with clients and colleagues securely. You have access rights. You can say they can get it and they can't. You could say, I need to know their email address before they download it. You can even say things like they can only download it once. Let me show you how it works. I have it on my screen here. Make it a little bit bigger. Notice, first of all, that I have branding. So it looks, it's got your company logo on it. It doesn't look like somebody else's thing. It looks like your thing, which is nice, very professional. Let's say I have a file here. I want to share this file here. So I check that box. I say send. Now, I have two choices. I can send an email. By the way, this also has an Outlook plugin that works straight from Outlook. But I say I want the link. Now, here's some of the choices. Email me when the item has been downloaded. You could check that. Require recipients to enter name and email before downloading. You can or cannot check that. It's up to you.
Now, download access can expire never, after a year, 6 months, 3 months, a month, a week, a day. So I could say, look, they have 1 day to get it. How many downloads do they get? Anything from unlimited to all the way down to one. And then I press that button, and it delivers me a unique URL. Now, here's one real advantage. They don't have to have a ShareFile account to use this URL. That's huge. If you're dealing with clients, you don't want to make them jump through the hoop of getting an account. They get a link in their email to this file. It can be, I think, up to, I can't remember what the size is, huge, like 10 gigabytes, something like that, that they just press a button and download it. I mean, that is really simple. No membership required, nothing. It's pro. You can track when they download it, how often. You have complete access control. They've got a great support team at ShareFile, too. So it's easy for you. I got a special offer. Sign up today, and you're going to get a 30-day free trial when you use our offer code, TECHGUY. So go to ShareFile.com, and you'll see a try it free. Listeners, click here. Enter name or offer code. You ready? T-E-C-H-G-U-Y. And you can choose the industry. By the way, they customize this for a bunch of different industries. Let's say you're a nonprofit. Continue. And you get the free trial. 30 days. Just take it from me. This is a much, you know, you've heard me say for years, don't send attachments. Well, then you know that much. This is better than that. You don't have to worry about bounce backs. Confidentiality is secure, is assured. It's completely secure. ShareFile.com. Please try it today. I use it all the time. Yeah, they got a desktop sync and all that stuff. ShareFile.com. I got the... I'll show you the desktop sync. This is kind of cool. It does it in the background automatically. They got a widget. It's gonna be all right. We don't even have to try. It's always a good time. It's always a good time when you're talking tech. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Phone number 8888. Ask Leo. So I hope I helped Steve. The fundamental question was, should I buy the new MacBook or save money and buy the refurb? Apple has a... By the way, on refurbs, let me just say this. If you're buying refurbs, buy it from the original manufacturer. Do not get refurbs from third parties because you don't really know what's going on. Apple actually has a very good refurb store. Prices are not, you know, hugely low. You'll save a few $100 typically. Let's see. Let's just go there and see here. So refurbished MacBook Air 1.6 i5, save $140. The good news is the warranty is full. So they, you know, it's as if you're buying it new. Most cases, these are, in fact, new. The state of California and many other states say that if you sell something to somebody, they open the box and bring it back, you can't sell it as new. But often people say, oh, they have buyer's remorse, or they decide to get something else instead. And so Apple has to give you a discount. And so you're saving, you know, anywhere from 10 to 30% off. Here's a good one. Refurbished MacBook Pro i5. It's a couple of years old, April 2010. $500 off, 29% off. So that's about as big as I've seen on Apple, on the Apple site. And that's because it's a couple of years old. You'll get some savings. So it's really up to you how much the money is important to you versus having the latest, greatest. In this case, the difference between the existing MacBook Pros and the last model is not insignificant, especially with the Retina display. But let's say you're not in the market for that super expensive one. The new MacBook Pros have some nice new features. The faster processor based on a faster processor technology. Better video cards. That's probably the biggest difference you'll notice. The ports have changed. The hard drive options are different. Not a huge difference. And you may say, you know, I'm willing to give up a few of the latest features or maybe a little bit of speed to get to, say, 10, 15, 20%. I always buy the new one, but that's me. It's my job. Kevin in Trinidad, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Kevin.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome to the show. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Thank you for taking the call. I have a lot of videos on my computer, but they aren't necessarily standard format.
Okay.
And I use VLC player to watch them. Blue now is there a way of being able to play that content on my TV?
Ah. VLC is great, by the way, and all the geeks in our chat room and all the people who hang out here at our network are big VLC fans. It's free from videoland.org, and it is a better player because it plays back, as you say, DivX, MKV, video files that are in odd formats. The trick about getting it onto your screen has more to do with your television and your hardware capabilities than anything else. Do you hook up your computer to the screen, or are you trying to do it wirelessly?
Well, I can hook it up to the screen, but what I wanted to do is I was get like an equivalent of the Apple TV that would be able to play that sort of content.
Right. So that typically on the Windows side, Apple uses something called AirPlay, which is really just a slightly modified, rebranded DLNA. And many PCs and many TVs support DLNA. TVs support it directly. You wouldn't even need to get an external box. It stands for the Digital Living Network Alliance. And it's a standard created by the DLNA trade organization for how consumer electronics can talk to televisions. So if you have a DLNA-compatible notebook, for instance, and Lenovo was making those, others make those, then and a DLNA-compatible TV, then it's possible, just with Apple's AirShare and AirPlay, it's possible to select it in the player and have it go right to the TV. But you need to have that capability built in.
Right. I'm not sure of either, to be quite honest.
Yeah. Too. So that's the trick. You can get DLNA set-top boxes, like the Boxy Box is one. Does Roku do DLNA? I'm not sure. I think it does. Western Digital, the WDTV Live does. So the number of products that have DLNA, you should look for that on the box. David Bix in the chat room is saying, and I probably agree with him, the WDTV Live is the best DLNA box. It's not a great set-top box. I think there are better choices. Roku does not do DLNA, somebody's telling me. Google TV, I think, might. So that's what you want to look for, is a DLNA device. And then the question is, how do we get that onto your computer? And that's another question. I'm not sure how to do DLNA if your computer doesn't support it in hardware. Maybe the chat room has a software suggestion for DLNA on Windows. You're on Windows, of course.
Yes, I have a Dell XPS.
Yeah, okay, so it looks like there are DLNA apps that you could put on Windows. So that's what I would just do, a Google search for DLNA server. Here's one called TV Mobily. It's an open source DLNA media server for Windows, Mac, and Linux. TV Mobili, terrible name, but it does it.
Right. Okay. Thanks a lot for that.
Sure.
Can I ask one other question?
Sure.
I need to get storage, hard drive only, but I was wondering where.
I'm sorry. The Skype did something weird right where you asked the question. Say it again.
I need to get a larger external hard drive, but I was thinking about getting something like Drobo.
Yeah.
Or some other device.
Sure. So what Drobo offers that's a little different from just an external hard drive, you can get an external hard drive cheap. I don't know how about in Trinidad, but it's certainly in the U.S., the big box stores all sell terabyte-size drives for under, you know, $120. Drobo lets you get even more massive sizes by combining multiple disks, four, in some cases more disks, into a single giant USB or FireWire or eSATA drive. There's a negative to Drobo. It's a little more complex, a little more expensive. So it depends on how big you want. I think for most people, a simple external drive is all you need, especially since you can get these in the 1, 2, and even 3 terabyte range. I thought that the La C that our caller was talking about last hour, that was a pretty remarkable deal. The La C, L-A-C-I-E, too big. Pretty amazing. When you talk about, say, 2 terabytes or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 terabytes of storage for just a few $100. So if you need a big size, that would probably be a good choice. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were talking about the Olympics and whether I'm going to watch the Olympics. I was talking with the chat room off air. And I mentioned that I've just kind of gone a little crazy. You know, I don't live in a, I live in a studio apartment. It's about, maybe 20 feet by 20 feet. It's not huge. But you know, I'm kind of crazy. So I have a normal HD TV, but I thought, well, let's go a little crazy. And I got a 120 inch projection screen that I can I press a button and it goes, zzz, rolls down. And of course the surround sound with a big subwoofer. And I was watching Wrath of the Titans. There you go. Release the Kraken the other night. Terrible movie, but boy, it's immersive when it's a 10-foot screen. 15 feet away from you. There's something to be said for that. Wow. I did it all just as it was a research project, you understand? Yeah, I feel sorry for my neighbors, too. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Robert, Springfield, Missouri. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
That hurt. Hey, Leo, how are you?
I am good. How are you?
I'm all right. Hey, can you hear me all right on this Bluetooth, or do you want me to take
it off? No, you sound fine. Let's go for it.
Hey, thank you for your research, Leo, on the Onkyo and the Emotivas.
That's what I was doing. That's how the setup goes. Did you try that?
No, not yet. I just went on vacation. I have 2 weeks, and I'm sitting here. Actually, I'm thinking about driving down to Tennessee to get those Emotivas. I'm going to go directly to them.
This is a really cool story because this is American-made, a small company out of Tennessee, and they make a very affordable, very attractive, and I'm very happy with the quality set of surround sound speakers. They also make their own receivers and amplifiers and all the accessories you need, and I'm very happy with them. I they're not a sponsor, but I want to give them a big plug because here's a great story.
Should I look at their receivers as opposed to the Onkyo then?
I am told I bought the Onkyo because it was cheap. But I am told by people like Scott Wilkinson that the Emotiva hardware is also very, very good. They're separates and they're kind of pricey when you put it all together.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're a serious audiophile, but the Onkyo was, I think I got the 616 for, I think, somewhere around $500, and it's got 7 HDMIs in, 2 HDMIs out. It's a little quirky. And, you know, I should say up front, I am not an audiophile. So, I like good sound. These sound very good. Right now, they're having a big sale. For instance, the left-right tower speakers I bought, I paid $800. They're $500 right now. During the summer, they have a big sales. So, I think these are good, but I don't, I'm not an audiophile. I'm 55 years old. Dude, I don't have ears that could tell the difference.
Yeah.
They sound good to me. Well, I'm pretty happy with it.
I'm a truck driver, so I'm not a home theater guy. But I listen to Lynn Wilkinson when he's on your show. And Gibson, I have gone all the way back to Steve Gibson's first show and listened to all of the Security Nows.
Oh, you're listening. He's talking about our podcasts. Yeah, Steve's amazing. Yeah.
I bought the Spinrite just to support him. I probably never use it.
Well, hope you don't have to. That's the nice thing. It's a hard drive recovery tool, and maybe you never need use it.
Exactly. You know, if you take care of your stuff, hopefully you won't back up your stuff like you guys have been telling me to do.
Right.
But anyway, you go all over the United States with me, Leo, in my big truck.
Oh, bless you, Robert. So you're all. You're a long-haul 18-wheeler guy?
Yes, sir.
That's awesome.
And, I just plug you in either to my earbuds, drown out the truck, or I plug you in over the loudspeakers through my iPhone and that little adapter they have, and away we go, 5, 6, 7 hours a day sometimes.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm so blessed because, well, you just heard a call from Trinidad. We got a call yesterday from Egypt. We've got pilots. We've got truckers. We've got people all over the world listening, and I just feel so blessed to be able to talk to all of you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, we're out here. We're listening, and your name is almost getting to be like a one word, like a prince or a Madonna, you know?
Yeah, maybe I could dump that Laporte thing and just be Leo. I should. How many Leos are there? I could be Leo.
You know, when we're talking about tech stuff, you say Leo, and everybody, anybody who's in this or around it or computer or whatever, they know Leo.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it is. Bill, don't get a big head on us now, but.
Well, I won't, because I've got kids, and that's their job, is to cut me down to size at all times.
The bigger bad situation here. Nephew bought a laptop. Well, grandma bought a laptop for him. And some kid out of tech college, his buddy, said, "Hey, I just graduated with a computer or something certificate or something. Let me put Windows 7 Ultimate no service pack on your computer, and you can do so much more with it."
Mm.
He had a
So okay. Basically now he has a pirated copy of Windows on his system.
Leo, I'm scared. I'm thinking. But, Leo, I ran Jelly Bean, Magical Jelly Bean, got the product code, and it gives me a product code for the Ultimate, okay? But when you flip the laptop over, the Microsoft...
Let me explain how this works. So Microsoft has that product code, and presumably your nephew's buddy has used it already.
Okay.
And registered it. So if you try to then, I don't know, has your nephew been able to, well, I'm going to talk about the, there's the legal issue, which is it's not a legal copy. That, you know, so that's the moral ethical issue. Then there's the technical issue, which is, can he continue to use it? He can. What will happen if he cannot register it? You know, yeah. I don't know if he's tried to register it with Microsoft or not, but if you don't register it, you have a limited amount of time, I think it's 30 or 60 days, at which point, so at some point, Windows will probably say to him, "Hey, you've got to either register this or it's going to stop working."
Well, that's the thing. The first question on that is he's had his laptop under the Ultimate for about 18 months.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, they must have activated it. His friend probably activated it. Now, here's one possibility, Robert, and this I would guess is what happened. His friend may have a TechNet subscription. TechNet, if you're a geek, which his friend is, TechNet is a, you know, several hundred dollar a year subscription that gives you copies of all of Microsoft's products, and the license number you get for Windows is good for at least 10 activations. And so it's probable that that's what he used. In which case, there is no problem. There's his friend is violating his terms of service with Microsoft.
Absolutely,
but that's for your nephew and his conscience.
Well, and that's none of my business. But I'm sitting here and cleaning it up, the malware and the viruses, you know, Sophos and all that. And I've got it all cleaned up. Mm-hmm. It'll install all updates except for Service Pack 1, and I've been working on it for a week now.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I've done the ready. I know the chat room's going to say, try the readiness tool. Leo, I've run the readiness tool like, I don't know, 5 times, and that won't do it. I have ISO'd it from
my
USB.
I'm not sure. That could be related to not being activated. I am not sure. I'm out of time, so I'm going to have to ask. Let's ask the chat room. What do you think he should do? Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Your official Olympic song this year.
Wait a minute. No.
Muse, Survival.
This is the official song of the Olympics, of the 2012 Olympics?
I won't forgive.
Just a little dramatic.
I won't give in, because I choose to thrive.
Wow. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That is a little over the top. Where's Queen when we need him? 8888 Ask Leo. Now, we do this show every weekend, and doing the rest of the week, I do a bunch of shows, but for the internet only. I hope you will join us on that TWIT podcast network, TWIT. It stands for This Week in Tech. I know it. I know TWIT is an insult, but I just like the acronym. This Week in Tech. You find it online at TWIT.tv. And we do shows about, you know, we do tech news every day. I do security, Windows, Macintosh, iPad. We're launching a new show about the iPhone called i5 for the iPhone. 5 tips every week. We do a show called This Week in Enterprise Tech. That's going to be fun. That launches on Monday. Home Theater Geeks with Scott. So we got a lot of shows on a lot of subjects. If you're a geek, know-how shows you how to do stuff. TWIT.tv. I'll put a little plug-in for my podcast network. Man, a little hobby on the side there. TWIT.tv. The website for this show, TechGuyLabs.com. And yes, I do believe maybe next week, the week after, that new show will launch. I'm very excited about that. Very excited about that. The new website, TechGuyLabs.com. Still the old one right now. That's all right. That's okay. Your last chance to enjoy it. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Let's get a few more calls in here before we have to wrap things up. Steven in Bakersfield, California. You're next. Leo Laporte here.
Hello, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks, Steven. Thanks for calling.
I'll try to make this quick, as I know you have other callers.
No, you've been on hold for an hour. You've been very patient. Take your time.
Okay. I recently purchased a soundbar to hook up to my television, and I don't know if I should connect it using the optical audio cable or the HDMI cable. I don't know which will provide me better sound.
Identical.
Oh, identical.
Identical. They're both digital. So unless there's a problem with one of the devices, you should get exactly the same data either way, and the soundbar will then decode it. Of course, you want to make sure if you're using a soundbar, that's designed to simulate 5.1, you know, 5.1 speakers. So you want to make sure that you're getting 5.1 sound to it from whatever device you're using. But in most cases, whether you're driving it from a AV receiver or a DVD directly, that should be just fine. It should be identical. HDMI is digital for the audio and the video. And, of course, Toslink or an optical cable, those are pure digital and work great. Thanks for the call, Stephen. Casey, Lakeport, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, hi, Leo.
Hey.
Oh, Leo, you're such a gem. It's like calling tech support. I hope you can help me.
I hope I'm better than tech support. That could be frustrating. I hope I can help you, too. What can I do for you?
Well, I just got a week ago a Nikon 3100D or a D3100.
Nice camera.
I love it. But so I bought all this stuff, of course, and I bought one of their zoom lenses.
Okay.
And so I used it on 4th of July. It was great. I was getting all the water skiers up here in Clear Lake and all that. And I plug it. I connect the zoom lens the last couple of days, and it's totally blurry. I can't.
Okay. Okay. This happens to me all the time. There's a little switch on the side of the lens that says AF-MF, autofocus, manual focus. Make sure that you've got it switched into autofocus.
Okay, I see it. It's on A.
Okay. And then, you know, you press the button halfway down and it should focus.
It doesn't, Leo.
It never focuses. Now, let me ask you, can you manually focus it with the ring on the lens?
No.
Okay.
I mean, it seems like something on the lens, but I've cleaned it.
I think the lens is damaged.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. So the lens, so zoom lenses have movable parts inside that you move in and out to bring it into focus and to zoom it. And it's not, you know, anytime you got movable parts, you have the potential of it being broken. It's still under warranty. I think it should be okay. Try putting it into manual, then manual focusing it. If you cannot manually focus it, the lens itself is probably messed up.
Okay, excellent. Then I'll return it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. You're a gem. I listen to you all the time. Been a fan for a long time. And,
thanks, Casey. Thank you so much. Well, you live in a beautiful area. I love Clear Lake.
I do, too. And yeah. I come down and see you once in a while. Make sure to shake your hand next time.
Please come down. Yeah. Bring your camera. I'll take a look at it.
All right. I'll get the new lens and then come down.
Yeah. I really, first of all, Nikon's making some really great entry-level cameras for the first-time DSLR. The successor to the 3100, the 3200, I've just recently recommended. Really, boy, for $699 is a great deal. Really nice camera. Really nice camera. I think they're knocking it out of the park. All right, I think I have time for one more. Let's see if we can get Pete from San Antone on the line. Hi, Pete. Leah Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, hi. Hopefully you can hear me. My voice is unfortunately dying.
You sound fine.
Oh, okay, great. I want to say you're the reason why I actually do what I do right now. I started watching you back in Tech TV with Kate.
Wow.
I didn't own a computer. But I watched you like a little child watches your dad. I was just mesmerized. Like every day I'd tune in. So I tried my best to get my first computer. It's a $2,000 Gateway 400 megahertz.
Oh, thing. I remember those. Yeah.
I still have it. Still actually.
A bit of history there. That's awesome.
Yeah, it is great. There's just so many questions I want to ask you. It's like, don't know where to begin. The reason why I called right now, I was, I love watching you. I don't have Siri or any of those kind of radio stations that would be able to pick you up. So the way I watch you is on my Google TV.
That's fine. Sure, you watch on the browser. It works pretty good.
No, not the browser. I purchased the Twit app.
Oh, and that works on the Google TV?
Yeah.
Awesome. I didn't even know that. I have to buy it. That's great. Which one did you get?
It's 99 cents, and it shows like all the different shows, like in little tiles.
That's awesome.
The live shows, they work great, but then there's the pre-recorded shows work great.
The live shows don't work as well.
Yeah. That's like I'll try to watch that. It'll play for maybe 5 minutes or so. Then it just freezes.
Yeah. Now, it could be us. It could be the bandwidth that you've got. This is a tough thing to diagnose. This is nutty cutting-edge stuff to try to broadcast live television over the Internet. And unfortunately, there are a lot of places you could have hiccups along the way. I'm not familiar with that app, so I'm going to go home tonight and try it on my Google TV. You can always go in the Google TV browser to live.twit.tv, see how that works. I would check that.
Oh, interesting.
And see if that works okay. If you're having the same hiccups or stuttering or stopping, then it's not the app. It's your bandwidth or Google TV's interface with your bandwidth. Or sometimes it's our server. You know, sometimes we have trouble at this end with our servers. So you shouldn't always assume it's you. What I would do is go to the chat room. Have you ever spent any time in the chat room?
I went there.
32.
It's funny, I do tech support.
Oh,
everybody.
Well, you know that. Then the chat room will always say if there's something wrong with the live stream. Hey, I got to run. Pete, thank you for the kind words. I really appreciate it. It's really great to talk to you. Before we're out of time, thank you, friends. Come back next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.